Welcome to the Dreamcatcher Podcast, a place where you'll receive a boost of inspiration, practical advice, and tools to maximize your success and personal happiness. And that's not all. You'll also get plenty of guidance on how you can use your gifts, talents, and compassion to contribute towards making the world a better place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a preview of what's in store and to also receive a free ebook. To sign up, simply visit www.thedreamcatch.com. Now it's my pleasure to introduce you to the host of the Dreamcatcher podcast, Celine Chinoy.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to a Dreamcatcher interview podcast special. So many of us long to own our inner authority without being caught up in what others might think and fearlessly share our message with our unique style and brilliance. Yet the idea of putting ourselves out there in the spotlight can be an intimidating prospect. We may be unsure of ourselves because we lack confidence and support. Even if we want to make our mark in the world, we may end up sabotaging our efforts. To help me speak about these challenges and how we can overcome them, I invited Linda Uchlow. Linda is a transformational speaking coach for visionary women who want to make a positive impact in the world. As a performer of 35 years and with a master's degree in expressive therapies and movement studies, she's been helping people get comfortable in their skin for decades. During our conversation, Linda shares some of her personal struggles that she faced with speaking her truth and how it facilitated her growth as an individual and as a professional speaking coach. She shares some valuable insights into how we can experience the freedom that comes with finding our voices and speaking without fear. Hi, Linda. How are you doing today?
I am so excited to be here with you, Celine.
Great. I'm so excited to be speaking with you today. My listeners and I are eager to hear your thoughts and perspective on how we can find our voice and learn how to speak without fear.
Yeah, it's so important, for us to feel like we can express ourselves freely and wherever we are called to speak. You know, we want to feel unhindered and freely ourselves.
Absolutely. So before we get into all that good stuff, I was reading your bio, and it seems that you have a very interesting and diverse background. Could you please tell us a little bit about your story and what inspired you to become a transformational speaking coach?
Yes. Well, it's kind of ironic that I'm doing the work that I'm doing now, because I did for most of my life try to avoid speaking. I was incredibly passionate about dancing. And one thing about dancing is that you don't have to speak. So it was my way of expressing myself. And I did, in fact, teach. I taught for, 25 years, helping people become more comfortable inside their skin and expressing themselves in a nonverbal way. But when it came to talking, that was something that I really didn't have an idea of how to feel confident about what I was saying or how I was saying it. I grew up with a speech impediment. I went to a vocal coach, all my life, really. I started with speech therapy as a young teen because I couldn't form my vowels and my consonants well. And I was very self-conscious. So I've been a performer as a musician and a dancer for several decades, but even then, I hated having to introduce a song. That was something that really kind of like made me shake. And even for like, I remember like 4 songs ahead of time, I'd be shaking just thinking about having to introduce a song coming up. So it's kind of, as I said, it is kind of ironic that I ended up this way. But, you know, over a time of our lives, we have experiences both negative and positive. And luckily, in the second half of my life, I had a bunch of positive experiences, such as I just want to say that I quit teaching dance because I thought my father told me I'd never succeed. And after 20 years, I gave up because I thought he's right. I'm scraping by. There's something that's not right about this. I'm just going to, I didn't know what to do differently to make me feel like I was successful. I felt like the quality of my, my teaching was really good. I had a very small devoted following, but I couldn't make ends meet. So I ended up taking some time off. I got married. I was able to take some time off and I got involved with the organic farming community. And so that's probably what you might have seen on my website that yes. said, wow, she's been into some different things. Now, fast forward to, I had my own farm. I was selling produce to local restaurants and I was at the same time listening to online business coaching. Mm-hmm. And I was using that to do what I was doing better, to like have my restaurants, you know, be raving about my stuff, to really look forward to having me come in and do my deliveries. And it was, I felt like, oh, wow, I am finally learning how to do business. You know, I'm finally getting the hang of it because I had been so discouraged from earlier on with the dancing that, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to run a business. But with the farming, I felt, oh, I'm getting a hang of this. But one day I stood up from weeding the onions and I thought, oh my God, I've always had a dream of playing on a bigger stage. And I thought I was just being grandiose, but I still want that. And here I am hiding behind the kale. Right. What if I could, you know, what, how am I going to feel at the end of my life if I don't try to do something bigger? And then I realized I had to make a change. I had to see what my full potential was. I had no idea what it was going to be, but I, the whole online world was new. This was back in 2014. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm going to come online. I'm going to be a coach of some kind. I have a lot of skills. I have a degree in expressive therapies and psychology, and I've, have the farming experience and I homeschooled my daughter. And so I've done a lot of things around education and I just felt like I had a lot to offer. I just had no idea what was needed. So, you know, that's kind of like how I started, but how I became a speaking coach or a transformational speaking coach, because generally what I do is I help people overcome the fear of being seen and heard. So whether that's speaking in front of a crowd or if that's on a video.
Yeah, a lot of people for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And me too. And that's why it's like kind of funny to me that I'm doing this.
So this awareness helped you kind of figure out that, you know, you had to work on those belief systems, right? And is that what led you towards the path of, you know, transforming how you speak?
Yes. So what I was able to do was to clear that away using different modalities like EFT and some forgiveness and using visualization and some self-hypnosis, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And within days, I'm not kidding, I felt completely different and I was blown away. I was even thinking when I got onto Periscope, I felt like, oh, finally, I can just relax.
Right.
Like after a hectic day, I thought, well, I wonder, God, this worked for me.
So it could,
I have my own stories, though. Would it work with other people?
Right.
They have different, everyone has their own stuff. But when I decided to check it out and try working with some people, we had amazing success. And I thought, whoa, this is amazing. This is what I want to do, because I realized what the downsides had been for me,
right?
Doing it with fear as opposed to doing it feeling open and free, because I went on to do 200 more Periscopes feeling great.
Wow.
And then it allowed me. So I realized that when you have this ambivalence of being seen and heard, like you, even if you push it, some people won't even do it because they're terrified. But even if you are willing to do it scared, and there are a lot of seasoned speakers and a lot of people who do regular videos, but they're scared every time.
Right.
There's an ambivalence there that impacts you. It First of all, it's not as much fun. And this is quality of life we're talking about. We want to enjoy our lives and we want to enjoy our work. And if it's a part of your work that you're not enjoying, that's a bummer.
I know.
And it also, it's a bummer. And it also, it will keep you from moving forward to the degree that you want to expand.
Yeah.
Because if it's not fun, it's like, you're going to like hold ourselves back. And it also can impact, it doesn't have to, but it can impact our ability to be present.
Yes.
Our ability to connect with our audience, our ability to remember what we're going to say, because part of us is trying to manage the symptoms.
That makes sense. I've experienced that myself. I mean, since you've had this visceral experience of getting over your fears of speaking, based on your personal experience and your experience in working with people, why do you think so many people are afraid of being seen for who they are, especially when they're out there in the spotlight?
Yes. Well, the spotlight shines light on what it is. So I see fear now as not this big monolithic thing, but actually a signal of your body saying, remember, there's something here that makes you feel like it's not safe. So the question becomes, when did you first start to feel it wasn't safe to be seen? When did you first start to hide? Because I see it as like a spotlight on some part of our lives. So like, just as I said, we all have positive and negative experiences, but we tend to be negatively oriented. And when something, like the way our memory works, when something is emotionally charged, we tend to remember it more. And so a lot of, for better or for worse, whether it was being bullied in school or having parents have high expectations on you, that you felt like you weren't really seen for who you were, you couldn't really relax and just be yourself because it wasn't valued somewhere. Or it could be that you were physically hurt, like I was, or emotionally, I guess that's in bullying, or you had teachers who were very stringent and you felt like you weren't good enough. I mean, it could be any kind of thing that happened in your family or school or friends. And usually it's not even one thing. It's a number of things that kind of gather momentum over our lives and kind of glom together until you've got this kind of thick thing that you say, I have no idea what's going on here, because it just feels like this one big thing.
Yeah, but it's, Linda, it's so common. It almost feels like something that's it's like an instinctive fear. It's like almost everyone on the planet is afraid of public speaking or anything that's out in the public eye.
Well, I think it seems that way, but when the Gallup poll survey have come back, it's actually only like 41% who claim that it's something that they deal with.
Oh.
Or highly.
I thought it's much higher than that. I read somewhere it's about 90% or higher. So,
well, yeah, I don't. Yeah, I had thought so too, but because of the work I'm in, I decided to do a little research, and I couldn't find evidence of it being really high, and that really surprised me. Because, I mean, to me, it feels like it's everywhere. But apparently, there are a lot of people who do get out there and feel fine. I have friends who say, yeah, it's not an issue for me.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad's one of them. He's a natural. Like, he can just spontaneously speak in front of a bunch of people and not feel one bit nervous. So I'm just like, oh, why does he do it?
Well,
I can do it, but I have to put more work into it. You know, it's just, it for some people, it just comes naturally, So.
Yes. And that's because throughout their life, they felt like it was a place where they could shine and be valued.
Right. Right. That makes
it makes total sense, right?
Yeah. I mean, and so for those of us who, who we need to manage our fears and overcome those blocks, like, do you have any tips that can prevent us from feeling this way so that we can share our
message? Well, yes. I mean, yeah, for sure. I mean, I have a lot of tips for managing it.
Okay.
There's a difference to me between managing and dissolving it. So dissolving it would be taking the time to go back and do some introspection. And you might journal about it, or you might work with, a hypnotherapist or someone who does EFT, or energy healing or even past lives, you know, because I was talking with someone who, I don't know whether or not you believe in this or not.
Oh, I do.
But you can, you know, it could be something that, you know, goes back some generations that you've inherited energetically through your, you know, your mother's or maybe not your father's side, but, or through a past life that is just of our own. So that's something I don't deal with, but, you know, it's something to be explored. What I love about this is, I know it's like, what is there to love about fear? But what I do love about it is that it's an opportunity to get to know ourselves more deeply and with more compassion so that we can really show up to be, the goal is to be able to be present. And that means not having anything that's pulling us back or hindering us or feels like a burden, because we're just clear and we're present and we're able to be in the moment and do what it needs to happen. So with dissolving, imagining fear, so if you want to dissolve it, I say, take the time to go back. Of course, I do this work too, and anyone is welcome to reach out to me for a strategy call on this.
Right, you specialize.
But if you were, so this is my specialty, is helping people get overcome the fear and find the place of fun. Because I feel like, why do it if it's not fun? So that's where I
totally agree with you.
Now, yeah, I mean, like, why do it? Life is too short.
Exactly.
Let's have it be the best it can be. Like, let it be a peak experience.
Yes, yes. I'm all for that.
So now, in terms of managing, there are lots of things that you can do. And I can share it at the end, but I have a PDF guide of 10 ways to manage your fear, whether it's of speaking, whether it's live or online. But a couple of other things that you can do are, one mindset is that I think especially women fall into is this need for approval and seeking outside validation. It's one of the things that makes us really good in the school system, because we know how to please our teachers and do what's required. And then we're told that we're good and we get the A or we get the grade. And that really does not serve us out in the world, because in the real world, it's not important to have everybody like us. It's not important to have others agree with us or everyone agree. What we want is to be able to have our point of view that has worked for, that we know works for us and can work for some other people, and draw those people to us because they resonate with what we're saying. So for instance, let's take my industry. A lot of people, I would say the majority of people in my industry, feel number one, that if you practice your content and your delivery and you know, you're confident in it, that you won't be afraid. Well, that's simply not true, because, and Barbara Streisand even this year was talking about how she's terrified of singing in public. She's so fantastic. And not like she doesn't know her material. She knows her material down, but practice is not a panacea for overcoming fear. Or doing it a lot of times is not a panacea.
I'm so glad you said that.
For, you know, so.
But I read everything.
So I have my, you know, belief where I put the stake in the ground is that practice and doing it over and over is not necessarily the answer. It can be for some people. But that's not really what's going on with fear. Fear is not something to be pushed through. It's not something to be dismissed or pushed under the table or ignored. It's something to be curious about and to investigate, so that we can use the opportunity to clear away whatever is cluttering up our psyche and clear it away. It's an opportunity. And then, of course, then you don't have to be managing it to the same degree. It may be that as you expand out into larger and larger platforms, you need to build your capacity for that kind of attention. But that's different than feeling like you're going to be attacked.
yeah, exactly.
So the mindset that I recommend for people to consider is, like, it's okay. for people to disagree with me. It's okay that not everybody, you know, that it, I can allow other people to have their point of view and I allow myself to have my point of view. And when you're able to do that, you will find that you will attract more people because they know who you are.
Right.
And they can say, I like that. I like that person because she believes this.
Yeah, because then you have a clear message that people can understand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And so, like, allowing yourself to step out of that approval trap actually is a step into freedom of, you know, allowing people to not everybody like you, allowing to not everyone agree with you is a freedom. So that's just a mindset that I recommend. In terms of, and I think it has to come from that kind of deeper place. You can do, I mean, certainly you can do deep breathing. You can quiet your breath. You can dance. You can do affirmations. But those are short-term solutions. They'll get you through the moment. And I would say use anything that gets you through the moment. It's worth it. But if you are going to want to expand your visibility and be out there a lot more, it's really worth it to clear out the clutter.
Yeah. So go deeper and see what's really going on under the hood.
And it's not just enough to know it, but then to do some kind of
change it.
I like to call it some kind of process to clear it away from your emotions, from your body, and from your mind. You can create your own ritual. You can do it with journaling.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, take time and think of multiple modalities, because human beings are so infinitely complex, which is a beautiful thing. It's not going to be necessarily one key that unlocks the door. Think of having several keys and that you come at it in several ways.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Thank you, Linda. Those are some really great ideas. So now we're going to shift gears a little bit, and I want to talk about something a little bit different. You've been a performer for 35 years, as you mentioned, and you have a degree in expressive therapies and movement studies. So I'm curious to know, what impact does our body language and how we use our bodies to express ourselves, what impact does that have on the impressions that people form about us?
That's such an interesting question, because you know how we talked about not as many people are actually afraid of public speaking as we tend to think. Our bodies, according to the research, we express more through our bodies than we do our words. And when I say our bodies, I think it probably also includes our tone of voice. So that we can say, of course, we know all this, that when we use our voice in different ways, you know, like, in fact, my daughter once said to me, Mommy, I hear what you're saying, but can you say it in a nicer way? I was thinking, oh my God, it's this 9-year-old. And I was like, yes, I can.
Yeah, she knows the tone when mommy's angry, and she knows the tone when
mommy's
pleased.
Yes, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
She's so wise. And but it's more than that. So like in our body, we kind of have a couple of ways of experiencing ourselves. It's either we're like holding ourselves in with some tension, or we're relaxed and is kind of like expanding out with relaxation. And most of us have some degree of or some patterns of tension in our body because of, you know, we're hurrying, we're busy, we're worrying, we're doing all kinds of things, we're under pressure. And so depending on our situation, we may have a higher degree of tension or a higher degree of relaxation. And we pick up on that. Just think about walking into a room and somebody's really tense. And you might think to yourself, I think I'm going to come back another time, or I'm going to avoid that person for a while. They might not have even said anything, but you can feel the tension in them. So our body language does relate a lot. Now, depending on who we're relating to, they may have more or less empathy or tolerance for our expression. For instance, because I was so shy in my life and hid so much, I have a lot of empathy for people who are let's say, at an event, sitting in the corner, standing in the corner, kind of folded in on themselves. I'll go over to them and start talking because I know that, you know, I was that person and I would have loved someone to come over to me and talk to me. So I do that. For someone else, that might make them feel vulnerable to see somebody who is feeling vulnerable. So they will avoid it in order to avoid that feeling in themselves. So how we think about impact of our body language is partially, you know, our responsibility of how we want to experience ourselves. We can't really control how other people respond, but we can know that different people will respond in different ways depending on where they're coming from. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, it totally does. Yes. Yes.
So, like, if you want to have the most, let's say, charisma or the most feel, if you want people to feel like at home and relaxed with you, then you want to think about opening your body or feeling more relaxed in your own body more so that people, when they're in your environment, they can feel like they're resting. You know, like they don't have to, like if you have someone who's kind of puffed up and they feel like all self-important, there's, I don't know, for someone else, they might, like maybe my husband who's a little competitive, he'll stand there and puff up next to him. But for me, it's kind of like, I don't have the energy for this guy, you know? So, you know, that's what I'm saying. We all, depending where we're coming from, we react to other people in different ways. So, but it, again, I don't think it's something.
A huge cultural component, right, when it comes to body language and how we, how we express our body language and how we receive
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And I'm glad you brought that up because that is so true. Like maybe some people in Asia will have learned it's not okay to make eye contact.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I was in Japan a couple of months ago and I knew that. That's why I didn't take it personally when they were more reserved, you know? So when they seemed reserved to me, but then I knew that that's how they are, you know? So.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, especially when you're in a culturally diverse environment, there, you have to give a lot more leniency towards your expectations of how people should be.
Correct, yes.
So, you know, as Americans, we may value a firm handshake and, you know, looking somebody right in the eye when you speak to them. And if somebody has a soft handshake, we might make an opinion about them. If they have, they really squeeze your hand hard, you might have another opinion about them. If someone avoids looking at you, you may think, oh, this person's very insecure. Or maybe if you're insecure, you say, oh, they don't like me. So there's 101 different interpretations for all of these things. Right. And
it is really important, right, in how we communicate with others, and we have to be really conscious of it.
Absolutely, especially if you're doing an interview, you want to, like, and again, it really depends on the situation. Let's say you're doing an interview for a position as an accountant. If you come in and you're dropping papers and you're like, your coat is on one hand and your coffee and your scarf is falling on the floor, that has an impression, you know? However, if you're the same person going into for an interview for a writer for a TV show, they say, oh, it's a creative person. They're kind of like flaky and creative. That doesn't, they won't hold that against you at all necessarily. So, or if you are a programmer and you're not making eye contact, they might say, oh, this guy's a real computer nerd. And, you know, it's okay that he doesn't make eye contact with me. It really depends on the values of the person who, on the other side, how well it matches up with their expectations and what they appreciate.
Okay. Yeah. So just being aware of the audience or the person that you're dealing with and adjusting your body language accordingly would really help.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, like I now, for instance, I always try to be kind of organized when I walk into a place where I am, let's say if it's a media outlet or I'm meeting a professional, I try to appear like I've got my, you know, all my stuff. Well, like here, I live in Boston. So in the wintertime, it's tricky because you have a lot of gear. But I try to organize it so that when I come in, my right hand is free to shake a hand, for instance. So yes, I think those things are important. And also, let's say you were in Japan, for you to honor their body language and what they feel is respectful, we wouldn't want to stare them down. That would make them feel uncomfortable,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So yes, it's about being aware of your own body language and being aware of the cultural expectation.
Yeah, I had to read up a lot about that and about their mannerism so that I wouldn't commit any faux pas while I'm there and offend anyone. So.
Yes. Yes. I spent a year in Asia when I was young and in my 20s, and I did the same thing for every country. I thought, what are the do's and don'ts here? You know, don't pat anyone on their head. Don't show your feet point your feet to people, or, you know, all these things.
Yeah. I mean, you got to be respectful, right? You're in their country. So, okay.
Yes.
Linda, I wanted to add one last question. You know, I've noticed that it's getting tougher and tougher to gain visibility and build your platform in today's crowded media space. So do you have any insights into how we can overcome this challenge?
Yeah, I think it's easy to look at what people used to be able to do and lament that we can't do the same thing and have the same results. For instance, it used to be that if you had a YouTube channel, there weren't many people who had YouTube channels, so it was easier to build that up. Now it may be more challenging, or the same thing with having a blog. However, not everybody, it tends to feel like it's very crowded. But there are a lot of people who are actually minimally online, first of all. Some people who aren't at all online. So in terms of like finding your tribe, sometimes all you have to do is turn a little bit away from the center core of that hustle and bustle to attract who you're looking for. Now, it may be that it takes a little more experimentation, but this is what I recommend. Find the things that you really enjoy doing and see how you can leverage that in as many ways as you can. For instance, if you are a blogger, how many ways can you leverage your blogs? You can have your blog on your own site. You can let people know about your blog through your email list, through in online spaces like Facebook, the different social media. You can post your blog or guest blog on other people's sites. There are some places like Positively Positive, for instance, will allow you to have your blog on your own site and also post to theirs. And that is a great space. I've had lots of visibility from when I've posted on that particular one. There's Mind Body Green. There are lots of places that will allow you to not have a unique blog. Actually, I'm not sure about Mind Body Green, but Positively Positive is one of those places.
Okay.
There's Medium, which is a whole blogosphere that has online publications. So checking out things there. There is doing Facebook ads for video views, which is pretty inexpensive. That leads to your blog. If you are willing to, you know, bring out one little tip from your blog and say, hey, if you want more, I go through all these other things, or I go into this more depth if this is something that you struggle with on my blog. So getting that blog out there in more ways, you can take that blog, you can take pieces of it, and put it on Facebook as little Facebook posts. You can put those in groups. People start to read your stuff in other groups. It's not like you're even having a call to action, but just having people read your stuff, they go, oh, wow, she really knows what she's talking about. So that's one thing, to take whatever you're doing and try to leverage it in as many ways as you can. The same thing if you are doing YouTube videos, you may want to you may want to start it on a Facebook Live, turn it into a YouTube video. You may want to cut it up and then run a little Facebook ad for video views. You can put it on Instagram. You know, so the point is to allow yourself to be more visible in the ways that you like to be visible, and engage people as much as you can, or invite people to engage with you as much as you can. And it takes some experimentation to find the voice for that. I, you know, truthfully feel like I'm still in experimentation. I started 4 years ago on Facebook. I never posted because I thought, well, what do you say? And I have no idea how to post. I mean, not that I technically knew how to do it, but I didn't really know what to say that would get any kind of response.
Right.
And it takes a while to figure out, well, okay, let me look at what other people are, what kinds of posts or what kinds of things they're sharing that seem to get response. So it takes curiosity,
trial and error
and deconstruction to figure out what feels like your voice and what are people seeming to be responding to. Another thing I want to suggest, I mean, it depends if you are selling a service or a product, and so I'm service oriented, obviously. But I found I was like, people were seeing me. I was getting known, but I wasn't offering, I mean, I was doing private coaching, but I wasn't really offering something that a lot of people could learn about me from or experience me from. And so last December, I decided I'm going to run some free challenges. And that was pretty amazing because I ran a Facebook ad to sign up for this free 5-day challenge. And it was something that I just held on Facebook and I was in the group every day. I think I got 300 people each time or close to that each time I did it. And it kind of blew up how many people knew about me because I was offering something that more people had less friction. Well, first of all, it was something that spoke to them that they wanted to learn more about. So that's number one. You have to kind of like market test an idea. Are enough people interested in this? But that's part of the experimentation.
Right.
And then putting it out in front of people and making it easy for them to come in. And now there's so many more people who do know about me and who are following me. And so that's, I think, what I would recommend is like find a way for people to experience you and your work if you are a service provider.
Right.
That's easy. And it doesn't have to be like some people use challenges as a lead up to a program they have, but you can simply do it as a way to offer value and to build your list and your visibility.
Great. Linda, those are some really, really, really amazing ideas. So that brings us to the end of this very, very inspiring conversation. Linda, it's been a real pleasure to speak to you. Before you go, could you please tell us how we can learn more about you and what you have to offer?
Well, what I would love to do is to offer a free gift of these 10 ways for overcoming the fear of speaking. And it's called the Fear to Fabulous Blueprint. And you can get it at lindayugalo.com. And my name is spelled Linda, L-I-N-D-A, Ugalo, UGELOW.com/blueprint. And if somebody who is listening feels like they, you know, like this is something they've been struggling with and they know it's their time to get out there, whether it's on video or speaking in front of groups, and they're ready to be on the other side, I invite you to reach out to me on my website, lindayugalo.com, or my email is linda@lindayugalo.com. It's just easy to find me all over because my name's so unusual.
Yes.
And then we can, you know, I do offer a free discovery call for people to gain clarity about what's going on for them and ways that they can move forward, whether it's working with me or doing something else.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Linda. I appreciate you being here and sharing your wisdom with my listeners.
It's been a real pleasure to talk with you, Celine. Thanks so much for all you do.
Thank you so much. You have a great day.
You as well. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed what you just heard, please subscribe to my podcast and feel free to share it with your friends and family. Take care and speak soon.